Welcome. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. It's The Money Show. I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you got a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995, 504-260-0995. Got a lot coming up on the show today, but it's all going to be related to what? Money. So if you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, then you have come across the correct show. This is the show that is designed to help you, specifically you, with your situation. Because the guy across from me, Gregory Ricks, he's a financial advisor, has his own practice and everything. 504-260-0995. We would love to get you some help. Hey, Gregory.
Hey, James.
I got Art Laffer coming up. He was on Maria Bartiromo earlier today. I would like to try and revisit a caller from Saturday's show. And I really liked what you did on Saturday when you talked about a scenario you had brought up about a non-spouse beneficiary, because it's one of the more common scenarios that I think happens when it comes to people inheriting IRAs, but we don't get a whole lot of those calls on the show. So I think you filled in a nice little gap there.
Yeah. And actually there was a case we were working on today regarding planning that out as well. And so I was coaching up some of the advisors on those strategies.
Couple things I want to ask you about. Baton Rouge office still set to open, I guess, 2 weeks from Monday is the...
Yeah, our timeline is we're trying to get ready. We're going close on that, and that's what we're shooting for.
Good deal. I want to also mention that we have the Save Our NOLA Restaurants and Bars program is kicking off next week. And the first place we're going to be highlighting is a Mid-City classic, the Beach Corner. Have you been to the Beach Corner? Are you a Beach Corner fan, Gregory?
I have not. I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, wow. You've passed it 1,000 times, and you probably thought it said Beach Comer because the classic-looking neon sign that they have out front, the R runs into the N. And so they're completely connected, and it looks like I thought it was Beach Comer for years. And I actually went in there, and they have in regular print on the menus Beach Corner, and I slapped myself in the head. Have I been calling it wrong this whole time? And the answer to that is yes, Parker. You've been calling it the wrong name the whole time. Now, the one thing I was told about the Beach Corner was that if I go there and I get anything, I need to get their burgers because that's what they take serious. And they weren't kidding. There's one burger in there, the Beach Burger, 10 ounces. So you could just slap off the buns and the fix, and that's a whole meal right there just in the burger. But no, they weren't kidding. And if I had to pick one, this is how many times I've been there. I used to live in Mid-City. I used to live right by it. I've been there a bunch. They have a Boudin burger, and I haven't seen anybody else cut a Boudin, put it on top of a patty, and then add pepper jelly. That's sort of like their little secret ingredient. Remember the pepper jelly showing up in the chicken sandwich was a big winner? It's has a similar magic effect on the Boudin burger. So that's what we're going to be highlighting starting on Monday. You'll hear the commercials for it during the show. I'm so excited to get that kicked off.
Well, you didn't mention where they're at other than Mid-City. It's 4905 Canal Street, New Orleans.
Yeah, that's probably worth a mention there. It helps.
I see the front now. I've seen it, but it just never got my attention. But that's, and that's the thing with us doing this to help restaurants. And I'm for trying new places as well. So I've not been there before, but it's on my list to try it. And, if burgers are their thing, I don't mind trying them. And I can see they've got a good assortment of chicken sandwiches as well. See how they fare in the chicken wars.
Well, I haven't gone through their whole menu. I can attest personally. I will, my scout's honor here. I wasn't a scout, but if I was, scout's honor, that they're fantastic. And you know what? I forget the location thing because I live in 2021 to where if someone doesn't tell me where a restaurant is, I just ask my phone or I just ask it for directions. Say, Siri, can you give me directions to the Beach Corner? And be like, hang on. All right, take a left.
That is one of the great things about living in this time, the digital age, is it doesn't matter where you're at. When I was up in Nashville a few weeks ago, I was like, okay, where are we going to eat? Just pull out that little map app and
your phone knows
restaurants. And well, look, we got a dozen places. Which direction do you want to go? We'll run it, stumble into something. We weren't stumbling, but we would reach a restaurant.
Well, I was talking to the marketing department today and saying, just out of the ability to properly promote these restaurants that are participating in our program, we probably need to go eat there. So we'll probably have to go, going to have to go out to eat at lunch. And I think it might, that might be a business expense, Gregory. I don't know. Is that something we have to ask Jude about this Saturday? Is that going to be a, that did that write-off come back? Because I think it had gone away, and then maybe is it coming back? I don't even remember. I just remember hearing some happy little rumors about that.
Well, we're getting, you know, write-offs for that now.
That came back?
Yeah.
Good deal. The webinar series continues. If you love paying taxes, then don't check out this webinar. But for the rest of us who are sane, you don't like paying taxes that much, do you? Well, go check it out. It's the No Compromise webinar. We have a couple episodes left. I believe, Thursday and Sunday are, and that ought to wrap it up. So that's, a webinar is real easy. If you've never done it before, you just go sign up. And before the webinar happens, you put in your email and it will email you a link. You click it and it pops up in your web browser, and it should be no muss, no fuss. It's pretty, about as tech simple as you can possibly make it. But it's been really popular as of late, especially on the topic of taxes and tax season. And probably second only to the series you did on Social Security. This is probably our second most popular webinar thus far. Or I should say your second most popular webinar. I'm not in it at all. So go sign up for that. Little blue banner pops up at the bottom of every screen of GregoryRicks.com. Numbers or anything to add? Or?
Well, yeah, something to add right here since you brought it up. As sure. A part of the Consolidated Appropriations Act signed into law on December 27th of 2020, the deductibility of meals is changing for food and beverages will be 100% deductible if purchased from a restaurant in 2021 and 2022. Entertaining clients, concert tickets, golf games, such as that, it's 100% deductible.
That
you
is
know,
the
it's
news.
Almost like I've got to have a business lunch.
Right. Hey, we've got to check these things out so we can properly market them, Gregory. It's just standard research. It's doing your due diligence. Eating fantastic food all over town. Hey there. Welcome to the number segment on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. This is where we give you a snapshot of what happened in the financial world today while you were out winning it life. You can follow along on the same charts and graphs we're looking at. There's a numbers page at GregoryRicks.com. There's one on the Winning It Life app. And you're going to see mostly good news. The session was mixed, but I'm so proud to see some records being made again. Now, the Dow Jones Industrial closed 50 points higher. It was up by about 200 points at one point in the day and gave a little bit back. Didn't want to hold on to everything. And wait, am I looking at the right day? Because my numbers page says something different than what my rundown says. No, I'm looking at the right one.
Yeah, that was up 53.62 points.
And the
other indices were off.
No, S&P hit a fresh record with their tiny little jump, and then closed down, right?
Well,
the intraday record doesn't really count.
Yeah, intraday doesn't count, but it moved around.
No chariots of fire.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's where we ended up there. And then the NASDAQ was down just about 0.5%.
10-year treasury is 1.642% in the yield. Crude oil moved up more. We're at $62.89. Brent crude, $66.32. So this is interesting to see where this is going. Gold futures off a little bit today. We're at $1,737.10. Silver's at $25.48.
Well, that's not too wild. The short sheet is starting off with all the red across the fangs, and then it kind of splits after that. And it's not too shocking to see a bunch of red in the short sheet when you see that much red in the indices. But after Tesla's huge day, where they put on another 8% or so, they gave about 4% or so of that back. Still a ridiculous valuation. Here they are sitting at $732 a share. But I wouldn't call it a bloodbath, but it was a solid loss all across our alphabet stocks. All of them lost at least 1% except for Google. And a couple of them, Netflix and Facebook, were down by more than 2%.
Big stories of today centered on the worlds of old finance and new finance, Goldman Sachs and Coinbase. Goldman led the Dow as its share price climbed following strong first quarter earnings. Remember, this is earnings week here, has started up. The investment bank surpassed analyst forecasts with per share earnings of $18.60 compared to the $10.00 $1.22 estimate from analysts surveyed by Refinitiv. That's an increase of 498% from a year ago. Ooh. I would say they crushed it. Cryptocurrency platform Coinbase made its debut on the market this afternoon. The company's share price soared past its reference price of $250 and touched a high of $429.54. Then moved back down, curtailed its gains to $328.28. Bitcoin enjoyed a similar run-up in value today, touching an intraday all-time high of $64,841 this morning before coming back down to about $62,000 around the market close this afternoon.
Well, look at Bitcoin.
Billionaire Mike Novogratz, I butchered that name.
I think you said it perfectly.
Novogratz is looking past Coinbase's performance on its debut, predicting that Bitcoin is in for massive growth in the future. Of course he would be optimistic about it. Why, you know, this is his company that he started about 10 years ago and made him worth about $20 billion today. So somebody welcomed him to the club. We can't. We're not in the club, but he's joined the billionaires club.
It sounds like you point out, rightly so, that the gold salesman, always optimistic on gold, isn't he? Very bullish guy.
Yeah, and this is news of a death. Bernie Madoff, mastermind of the nation's biggest investment fraud, dies at age 82. He was, you know, in prison for like 150 years sentence, so he was going to die in prison, and he did.
I love Bernie Madoff stories, basically all of them, because from the point of view of this show, Bernie Madoff is the financial scammer's Michael Jordan. He is the greatest of all time, and there's been other good ones, and like the original Mr. Ponzi has an impressive story, but this is the highest height of financial scams in our lifetime.
He masterminded the biggest investment fraud in U.S. history, and if you didn't hear, he died at age 82. Biggest fraud in U.S. history, ripping off tens of thousands of people. It's around $65 billion. Madoff was serving a 150-year prison sentence for this scheme, which investigators said defrauded as many as 37,000 people in 136 countries over four decades. Victims included Steven Spielberg, Kevin Bacon, former New York Mets owner Fred Wilpon, and the Nobel Peace Prize winner Eli Weasel, and many, many ordinary investors. So he was a well-known Wall Street guy, which took a lot of people by surprise. He's one of the greatest swindlers of all time. It's less well-known that he also ran an honest and successful market-making business, that he was one of the fathers of the NASDAQ stock market, and that he pioneered the practice of trading firms paying retail brokers for the right to execute their customers' trades. Robinhood, for instance, the company in the middle of the run-up of GameStop and other stocks, recently receives payments from trading firms for its customer order flow, and it's also less well-known that other people who have never been prosecuted made far more money from Madoff's crimes than he ever did, and that authorities had evidence of his fraud for years before they ever did anything about it. And that's some of that opinion there is coming from Newsweek piece there. I'm trying to see. Yeah, by Jim Campbell. And authorities did receive warnings ahead of time of what was going on, and it's been chronicled that there were several people that were following what he was doing and telling them that it wasn't real, it was fake, there's no way he was pulling off what he was doing. You know, there was, and he was supposedly leveraging options, and based on the amount of money that he was managing, they said there's not enough options market to pull that off, but at, you know, at some point it did come apart. He had partners in it. His big partner in the scheme committed suicide. His part of all that money scammed, the guy still had, and it was returned. You know, I think one of Bernie's sons committed suicide as well. So there's a lot of people, you know, when this came to light that were part of it, it didn't end well for them as well. And the bigger thing is tremendous amount of people were impacted that were innocent. They were simply investors. And there were large investment firms impacted by it as well, where they were using him as one of their money managers. And of course, none of it was real. And then you had people making money off of it and taking money out and did well in it, but it was off of other people, because that's what essentially a Ponzi scheme is it's not making money. They're using other investors' money to pay off the returns and keep it going. So because it isn't working, it is a fraud, a sham. It basically takes advantage of everybody, because they're using the funds that you think are invested that's there. They're just using it to pay off returns and keep it going. Do you have any other thoughts?
Well, there's a lot to learn from the Bernie Madoff story. For one thing, it's you even mentioned a Nobel Prize winner in there, not Peace Prize, someone who actually won like a science chemistry, someone who's a real brain. They fell for this. Don't think that you can't fall for this. Also, some of the other red flags were the huge returns. What was he?
Well, he was making 12%. He always made 12%, no matter what the market happened. He made money, and that was part of it, is it just doesn't work that way. Making double-digit returns, and no matter what, he makes those returns. And it was just, it's crazy, but actually most of his adult life, even while he was head of the NASDAQ and stuff, he was running this Ponzi scheme on the side.
Head of the NASDAQ.
Yeah.
All right.
And he was doing this for a heck of a long time. He was busted on December the 11th, 2008, after his two sons turned him in.
Thank you, sons.
Crazy. So it kind of started, he pleaded guilty in 2009. He said it started in the early 70s. It is really crazy. You know, when it's too good to be true, maybe it is.
Just a lot of really smart people, and I'm not talking about Kevin Bacon, and not just the Nobel Prize. People who are immersed in the financial world were duped by this guy. It just makes me have trust issues, Gregory. Trust issues come to the surface.
Core things that when you're writing the check out to the investment guy, if you're working with somebody and you're writing a check out to him or to his firm, you might have concerns if you're making the check. Yeah, I'm putting $100,000 to work. Who do I make it out to? Oh, just make it out to me. It'll be fine. And if they're creating statements, and that's what Bernie was doing, there's a problem there as well. And a simple rule, just, you know, my firm, my day job is Gregory Ricks and Associates, the Total Wealth Authority. People don't pay that money to my firm. We custody over at Fidelity Investments, and we use insurance companies also. So if somebody's investing money and writing a check to do so, they're either writing that check to Fidelity Investments for their benefit, FBO, or they're writing it to the insurance company where the assets are going. Or if they're making contributions into their qualified accounts, it's going to Fidelity Investments. It doesn't go to my firm. It's just kind of core simple rules that we have to obey. For us, it's very simple, but it's very important. So if somebody writes a check out to my firm, we cannot accept that. We have to catch that and return that back to them. It's very, very important. And I always kind of say nobody can bring a, a bag of money. You can't walk into the office with a suitcase of cash. We don't accept cash. You actually, if somebody was to come in there with cash, they can't stay. They have to leave. We can't sit down and have a conversation with that sitting in the office area, whether it's in the conference, they can't stay. So it's pretty important. Bernie, he felt differently about that, obviously.
This morning, Gregory sends me a text. Hey, Art Laffer's on Maria Bartiromo. You better watch. And I'm glad I did, because now there's two things. I got to run by Gregory because he told me to watch it. First off, I think this is great that he's getting the message out in some form or fashion, but it's horrible that this message isn't heard by most of the United States. You know, if Trump would have won, we'd be hearing this all day, every day. But he makes the case that you don't want to mess with the Trump tax cuts. You don't want to revert the corporate tax rate or move it up to 28% or move any of the brackets or go after the people who make over $400,000. You don't want to touch this thing because it's actually worked really good in three different ways, and you're jeopardizing all that.
Trump's tax cuts. Let me tell you the results of Trump's tax cuts. Number one, total federal government revenues. Total federal government revenues rose at a faster rate in the 2 years following Trump's tax cuts than they did in the 2 years preceding Trump's tax cuts. Number two, the U.S. economy relative to the rest of the world, the OECD, improved its growth rates by a very, very large amount following Trump's tax cuts, where they had been right with the rest of the world preceding that. Number three, the benefits of those tax cuts inured very much to the benefit of the poor, the minorities, the disenfranchised, the undereducated, the young. The lower groups got huge increases in median wages relative to the top group. So all of these sort of talking points done by the liberals and by the Biden people are completely wrong. If they reverse that tax bill, which they're trying to do with all their hearts, if they do, they will experience a reversal of the consequences of that tax bill. Revenues will go down relatively. The poor will not be well served. And the economy's growth rate will be diminished. It's really straightforward and simple. I think your friend, my friend, Larry Gatlin says, it ain't rocket surgery.
I can't see where the other side or the opposites wanting those wanting to make the changes, how they come to that's going to make it better. I don't quite see that. You might have a different take on that, but I just think here's the thing I get, and this seems to what is happening in Washington, is everything's being changed because they're wanting to change away Trump. Anything that Trump did, they're wanting to alter. And I'll step into the border fiasco that's going on, and that's just because they don't wanted to unwind Trump's policies, and all they've done is make it completely worse. Kamala said she wasn't put in charge of the border. She was put in charge of the core problem.
Oh, that's different, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
So she's got to go down and talk to the countries down there south of the U.S. where they're leaving from to fix that. Well, they undid what he did. He had kind of fixed that and had them helping slow all that down.
That's interesting, because I wasn't aware that the policies in Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Mexico all changed at the same time and right around the election. What an incredible coincidence that it's their policies and not yours that are causing the change in behaviors of immigration.
And continuing upon that is what's the systemic problem? It's policy coming out of Washington is what's made it for. Now they're talking about, you know, we're going to have to finish some of these walls. So once again, it goes to undoing.
No.
And now we go to the taxes. Now, this is the Trump's tax cut. Oh, we've got to make that go away. And let's let Art Laffer continue. This is really good.
All right. So Steve Forbes was in on the conversation. When it's his turn to talk, you hear two titans of policy history making some pretty scary points.
Yeah, how do we avoid a replay of the 1970s?
By the way, I just want to apologize for how skippy the audio is. When I was recording it this morning, there was a big rainstorm, and I have a satellite, so I was missing some packets in there.
Yeah, how do we avoid a replay of the 1970s? Massive spending, massive tax increases coming in. Fed's going to have to print money as never before. Bank reserves are brimming over. They want to lend that money out. How do we avoid a replay of inflation and stagnation?
Well, it's very, you know, when you look at it, you're completely right. There are no reserve requirements anymore that have any impact whatsoever. What the Fed is doing, Steve, as you know, is they're issuing liabilities, paying 50 basis points, and they're taking on bonds at 50 basis points. I don't see how it changes. So far, Steve, I haven't seen any indicators in the macro market that tell me that the inflation's coming. Gold prices are not rising. Now, okay, maybe that's because cryptocurrencies have replaced them. But okay, my friends in businesses that are running at the ground see inflation coming.
Ooh, there's a lot there. Go.
I was having a discussion about that today, is we're seeing inflation coming everywhere. Gasoline up, grocery prices are up, board feet of lumber are increasing. We saw prices of oil today moving up. Food prices are moving up. Look, you can't even get discounts. You know, this negotiating for cars is like this, that part's gone too. It's like, you know, we don't have many cars. You just got to pay this price. Yeah. What that is inflation as well. We're seeing it everywhere.
Lumber, you're right, up another 2.7% just today. It's at $1,212.75 per board foot.
So when they, and did they mention the stagflation in that segment?
Yeah, that was at the very beginning, Steve Forbes.
Yeah, stagflation occurs when the government or central banks expand the money supply at the same time they constrain supply. It can also occur when the central bank's monetary policies create credit. Both increase the money supply and create inflation. So we have an expanding money supply and we have inflation coming. It's here, but you're going to feel it more.
All right. Now that we got that out the way, I want to revisit this scenario you brought up on Saturday. We'll play this now and give me a little bit more after the break.
And so I was having a discussion where somebody came up in discussion. They're inheriting qualified money this year. A relative died, left the money to them. So it's a non-spouse beneficiary. Remember, over a year ago, they changed the rules that now when you inherit a non-spouse IRA, you have to take all that money out of that IRA you inherited, non-spouse IRA. You have to take it all out over 10 years. I was having a discussion about that, looking at what the opportunities are, and was a plan for taking that money out systematically, also not to push them in other tax brackets. So we were looking at the brackets, what's the efficiency? Because one of the options, they could just cash it right now. And let's say it's $250,000, $250,000 on top of their income, which is household is $100,000 a year. Well, guess what you just pushed up into? Pretty high tax brackets there. Well, you could wait to take it out year 10, because there is an RMD year 10, which is 100% of the value of the inherited IRA. Well, that's not a good plan either, because what are we expecting taxes to be in the future, James?
Higher.
So that's not a good plan. So more of the plan is systematically. And then I bounced an idea off. I said, what if they took $25,000 out each year over the next 10 years? And then whatever that balance is, And we could work out the math and put an interest rate, figure that out. Yeah, pay taxes on that $25,000 each year, and then take and put that in the max funding strategy. So a 10-year plan, and then show them turning on income from that max funding plan, and now they've created an income stream that's going to be at zero for the rest of their life. That's some planning.
Chuck in Gulfport, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Chuck?
Hey, Mr. Ricks. Y'all were just mentioning the price of lumber going up, being $1,212 a board foot. I was wondering if you could explain what the dimensions of a board foot is.
Thousand board feet is what that reference is to. Per thousand board feet. We lost them.
All right. Well, fair enough. Yeah, so the board feet. You did this on the show when we started noticing lumber last year. And I can't say I committed it all to memory, but board feet to lineal feet, there's a couple of converters I can already see online. So I'm suspicious over whether he was genuinely curious about that question or if he just wanted to poke around in the depth of my lumber knowledge. And you win, okay, George? You win. I don't know.
Well, to calculate a board foot, you take a rectangular piece of lumber, measure the length of it in feet, rounding to the nearest decimal place, measure the width in inches. You can also measure in feet, so don't divide it by 12 in two more steps. Measure the thickness in inches and multiply all three numbers together and divide by 12. So you have to take three dimensions essentially and divide it by 12. That price though is not per board foot, it's per 1,000 board foot. So it's price of a bunch of lumber.
I will revise my wordage in the future if it makes George happy. That was his name, right, George?
Yeah. Aren't you always saying per 1,000 board feet?
Oh, no.
You're saying per board foot.
Well, I've heard other people on TV saying it, so I want to sound like the cool kids, and I failed, okay? I was trying to sound cool.
This is winning at life. We have to be accurate. They expect
per 1,000
that of us to get it right. So, James, you have to be on board. Per 1,000 board feet.
I'll step it up. Thank you, fake name George. I'm pretty sure it's a fake name, isn't it? Okay.
I thought he was calling about Social Security. I was like, oh, yeah, Social Security.
Yeah, we like to talk about that anyway. All right. So the last scenario I played going before the break, there were a few things you mentioned in there that I knew if it wasn't the end of the show and you had a little more time, you were kind of dying to get into that. Non-spouse IRA beneficiary, just the options on what you can do with that lump sum is always a cool discussion.
Yeah, so when speaking of couples, typically husband and wife, couples make each other of the couple, the other person, as the beneficiary of, say, their annuity. They expect to leave stuff behind to them. Their IRA, they're leaving that to their spouse. And you know, for example, life insurance, annuities, IRAs, 401ks go by contract, meaning they go by beneficiary designation. Now, if your primary beneficiary is your spouse, then you should absolutely be listing a secondary beneficiary. And all my kids don't get it in this day and age. You need to name them individually and give the percentage you wish them to receive. And that way, each of them get their own titles, essentially, to their own share by naming them as a beneficiary, so they get their own account. It's not a commingled inheritance. So when it's not your spouse, then it's a non-spouse beneficiary that's the beneficiary of the account. Now, a spouse has the ability to basically take that IRA they just inherited from their spouse as their own IRA and take required minimum distributions when they're of required minimum distribution age, which is 72 nowadays. And they don't have any time limit because a non-spouse beneficiary that is of age of majority or older, when they inherit that, they have 10 years to take the money out. The year 10 RMD is 100%. Years 1 through 9 doesn't require a distribution. So you inherit somebody's IRA that's not your spouse, James, you don't have to take anything out of it for 9 years, but year 10, you have to take 100%. So when you start looking at that, and there was a discussion today on a person that we're helping, I'll just do this number for conversation's sake. They inherited $500,000. And the thing is, they make pretty good money. They probably make, let's round it, $100,000 a year. So now they've got to also take out money out of the IRA. If they take it all at once, what's the tax bracket for that? It's pretty darn big, I believe. See if I've got that pulled up here. Grab tax brackets. You know, if somebody's making, and we'll use a single person, for example, here for this conversation, 24% tax bracket. So whatever you're making between $85,000 to $163,300 in 2021 is taxable. That block of money is taxable at 24% because you reached over the 40 to 85,000 bracket, which was 22. So if they're in the 24% bracket. Now they've got to take money out of a Benny IRA. They're paying 24% on every dollar that they're taking out. And if they were cashing a $500,000 IRA, well, they're jumping up into the 35% bracket. So if they don't need that money, it might be the case where somebody in here says, yeah, I've been waiting for this money. I want to pay off the car, the boat, the house, and buy a beach house. We don't have conversations like that, but there probably are cases where people need to spend the money in a short period of time, but I surely wouldn't want to do it in 1 year. So the conversation shifts to, are we doing this game planning for 10 years? Just like what I spoke about that case the other day on the show was probably taking out $25,000. And one of the options could be to do a max funding strategy where you take and put that into that strategy and create a tax-free income that could generate $400,000-$500,000 in tax-free income, possibly out of using that strategy with a Benny IRA. There's another one we were discussing today, that one, the $500,000 range. So this person's having to take out $50,000, $55,000, $60,000 a year. And what we were looking at, are they staying within that tax bracket there? And we have to have a game plan of how we're managing it, knowing these distributions have to happen each year to be tax efficient. Now, what I mentioned to the advisor, now, you know, they could want to take it all out next 3 years because they may have a reason to do so. If they don't, we're going to plan this so it's tax efficient and gets repositioned to create long-term income.
Is that Chuck on the phone? Chuck, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Chuck?
Hey, I appreciate you taking my call back. This is actually, my name is Chuck, not George.
Okay.
But I did ask the question about the lumber foot, and I was not being facetious. I was confused over, because I thought at one time it was a thousand, and then I heard you saying per lumber, per board foot, and I was going like, I don't understand. But you explained it very well, but it was not a facetious call. But being that I'm back, I do have a Social Security question, if I may.
Oh, please. Yeah. That's what we were hoping for from you. But we were good with the board foot, and thank you. I know James sometimes messes people because we do get sometimes fake names up there and such, but I appreciate you calling back. And it was a good point.
You got 1 minute, Chuck.
Because he was giving it out wrong.
Right. You got 1 minute, Chuck. Go.
Okay. I'm 58. My wife is 46. I plan on retiring after full retirement age. But she's wanting to retire as soon as she possibly can when I retire. So she'll be retiring much earlier than when she actually hits her retirement age. So, I mean, I would be, 68? Let's say 68. She'd be 58. So she'd be 4 years away from retirement. Can she start drawing off of my retirement then, or does she still need to wait till she's 62, 63?
Does she have a work record? She won't be drawing off her work record?
Well, it does work. She's a teacher, but she does pay Social Security also along with a state pension.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. All things being equal, I don't have a problem with her turning her Social Security on at 62 because you've built the largest benefit and you're turning it on at 67. And when you die before her, technically, she's going to receive that benefit subject to any windfall elimination provision that might affect it some.
If you need any more help, go to Gregory. No, I'm sorry, Chuck, we're done. Go to GregoryRicks.com and the office number for Gregory, 504-832-9200. I'm James Parker, and we are Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks.
Gregory Ricks & Associates is an independent financial services firm that utilizes a variety of investment and insurance products. Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks and Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks and Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.